Manager for the Florida DOT. I want to welcome you all, our guests from other SASCO states, co-workers, all our friends here. It's always a little difficult to figure out what kind of interest we're going to have in a transit session at a SASCO conference. Typically, the folks who are involved in transit in their state DOTs use their travel money for APTA, their state transit associations, aren't typically represented at SASCO. But I think with the interest in transit that we're seeing as a result of $4 gas prices, I think that's probably sparked some interest in our session. I'm glad to see all the folks that we have here today. You know, it's been a long time since all of our state agencies went from being state road departments to departments of transportation. And the role that we all have now as state DOTs in dealing with much more than just the highway side, it's in dealing with the entire transportation system. Transit plays a very important part in the overall transportation system, and we really believe it's a growth industry and is going to continue to play an even greater role in the future. We have a very exciting program today. I'm sure you're all going to be very glad you chose to come to this session. We've got Matt Click, who is going to be talking about the future of transportation and the interrelationship between tolling and transit, really getting into the real pricing issues. And if you haven't seen Mr. Click do a presentation before, I think you're in for a treat. We've got Lowell Clary, who's going to be talking about transit finance and also public-private partnerships. I'll be doing detailed introductions as they come up. And we've got Lisa Bacow, who's going to be talking about Florida's transportation disadvantaged coordinated transportation system, which is a key role for all state DOTs in implementing the federal programs, such as 5311, non-urbanized transportation, job access and reverse commute programs, the New Freedoms programs. These are all state responsibilities, and Lisa and her commission do a wonderful job of coordinating transportation for the transportation disadvantaged. Just a little bit about what's happening in Florida. Many of you are aware, in Florida we've got 28 urban transit systems. We've got about 50 rural systems, 5311 recipients. Our ridership this year, last year that's been validated, is over 250 million trips taken in the state of Florida. And right now, just from anecdotal information, we think we're going to have a very large increase this year. Many of the major issues that are going on related to transit in Florida, we are a growth state. We do have growth management, a lot of effort going into transit-oriented development. The real estate and development communities have really picked up on this, and many, if not most, of the new major developments that are going on in this state in the urbanized areas do have elements of transit-oriented development. In Florida, we do contribute to local transit systems. We provide match to their capital programs. We have a block grant program that's about $70 million a year that they can use for operating assistance. We have seed money for service development programs to get new services started. We've got corridor money to help provide transit, high-capacity transit on our congested corridors. We've got commuter assistance programs. And we've got a very interesting program that was created in 2005 by the legislature called the State New Starts Program, where we're able to match local government funding to then match federal dollars to build transit new starts, which are major capital projects such as rail lines or extensions to existing rail lines or bus rapid transit systems operating on dedicated right-of-way. So that funding has helped us get a number of projects started. Our Miami Intermodal Center to Arlington Heights leg will connect the Miami Metro Rail with the Miami Intermodal Center at the airport by 2011. A very exciting project that we've been spending a lot of time with is the Central Florida Commuter Rail Project. And we're very happy to announce today that FTA provided us with the letter to move forward into final design, which those of you who are familiar with the New Starts process know that that's a very major milestone in the life of a major transit project. Another project that's going on that Mr. Click will probably touch on will be relating to the I-95 Express project. Florida was one of the urban partnership agreement recipients from USDOT last year, and we've got a tolling and transit project that's just getting ready to open this month in Miami-Dade County, and it will also extend up into Broward County in phase two. Let me start with our speakers. You notice on your program, we also had a representative of USDOT on your program. That was Mr. Jake Falk. He was subsequently replaced with Tyler Duvall, and you might have heard Mr. Duvall's plane was canceled last night and wasn't able to come in. We've got three great speakers. We've got an hour and a half. We'll see how it goes, but if anyone's got pressing questions after each speaker, we can entertain a couple. We can also entertain questions at the end of the sessions. So I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Matthew Click. Matthew is a senior associate with Cambridge Systematics, working in the areas of tolling and road pricing, transportation policy, and corridor and systems planning. Prior to joining Cambridge, Matthew worked for Florida's Turnpike Enterprise for 8 years in planning and government affairs, holding the positions of transportation planner, senior transportation planner, intergovernmental programs coordinator, and lastly as the director of government affairs. In total, Matthew has more than 10 years of experience in planning and project management. He worked as a research fellow at Florida State University while earning a Master of Science in Planning, go Knowles, with dual specialties in transportation and environmental planning. He also holds a Bachelor of Science from FSU with a double major in political science and sociology, graduating magna cum laude and Phi Beta Kappa. Matthew's a certified planner by the American Institute of Certified Planners. Let's welcome Matthew Clay.
When you're proud enough to hold a degree in political science, you realize you have to go to graduate school. So that's what led me to actually planning overall. First of all, let me start off by thanking Ed for inviting me to this panel. In fact, a lot of the stuff I want to talk to you about this morning as part of this Journey into the Future presentation I want to give to you culminated after a one-year research effort where Ed was kind of the central office and transit guru on the overall panel. So there's a lot of Ed's fingerprints on this presentation. And we had many a good late-night conversations about farebox revenue collection and things like that. So it was a lot of fun. And I appreciated the opening comment because I was kind of thinking, you know, I'm a highway guy, I'm a toll guy, I'm a road guy. You know, what do you want me to talk about transit for? But in the course of doing a lot of this work, looking holistically as to where we need to go for the next 50 years with surface transportation, time and again, transit came up. And we kept talking about transit and its ability to allow for more capacity, I mean more throughput in the roadway network. And that was really the genesis for a lot of what I want to talk to you about today. So I want to start you out with a quick video.
I'm Bert Sue in the control tower. We are about to take off on the highway of tomorrow.
A feature of this bridge is the elimination of congestion and the elimination of interference from all the various converging motorways and from all the feeder roads.
You're in control, so anything you want to know. The future's for discovery.
Each of us may have different ideas as to what that future will be. But every forward outlook reminds us that all the highways of all research and all communication lead us onward to better methods of doing things.
Now, I wanted to show you that video to kind of get you pumped up and get you excited. We're the last thing. You know, we're what's between you and cocktail hour and all those things. But there was an actual reason for showing you that video, and I really want to explain to you what you saw. What you saw were two major things. One, you saw ideas from 50 years ago from world's fairs and other places about what the future of transportation would be essentially today. This is from back in the 50s as to where they thought we would be in the turn of the century. The second thing you saw in that video montage was modern Hollywood interpretations or visions about the next 50 years of surface transportation, right? And what's interesting, the lesson in looking at that video is that the vision from the past and the vision about the future are strikingly similar. If you think back about what you just saw, maybe we should talk about what you didn't see. You never saw brake lights or congestion or queues. Never. All you saw was a surface transportation network operating without congestion, seamlessly, flawlessly, right? And this is what people, our customers of the surface transportation network, really want. They don't want to be motorists. They don't want to be transit riders. They don't want to be captive. They want to be customers, and they want to have choice. So I show you that video to really say to you, that is my challenge with this presentation today, is to present a thesis to you as an idea as to how can we take that Hollywood reality and make it, I mean, that Hollywood vision and make it a reality. How in 50 years from today can we have a surface transportation network that doesn't have congestion? And that's really what I want to lay out for you. And it's going to take us, we're going to have to really think differently and be willing to put on a new set of glasses. But what I hope we can do for the next 25 minutes is talk about how we make that vision a reality and deliver a surface transportation product to our customers that operates without congestion. So what I want to do quickly is take you through a little slideshow about the past 50 years of predictions. In other words, 50 years ago, where did they think we would be today? Because there's an important lesson in doing so. We'll then launch into the future, and I can show you some futuristic cars that Detroit is betting on and talk about the surface transportation network and how it's going to evolve or need to evolve to meet that future demand. So let's go backwards one more time before we jump to the future. And I want to point out to you, when you go back to old world's fairs and things, many people thought this would be our future. There are lots of pictures and ideas about taking flight. People were frustrated with congestion, and they thought, you know, to get away from the surface transportation network, we will take flight and get out of it. I can't tell you, this is one of hundreds of these types of images I found in my research. This is a Hilliard aerial sedan that Popular Mechanics thinks you're going to be flying around in by 1967. Or maybe, you know, cruising around on this cushion of air in this Curtiss Wright air car. Now, this is one of my favorites. This is, again, from Popular Mechanics, and they boldly claim that you'll have a helicopter in every garage. What's so interesting to me is the date on this publication. Look in the top left corner. It's February of 1951. It is a full 5 years before Eisenhower will sign the Federal Highway Defense Act. In other words, when this was written, there was no interstate system. There was only U.S. highways. So there has always been congestion, and there has always been a desire to get out of it. This thought that we used to have a perfect transportation system that only eroded in the 70s after both people went to work and the suburbs popped up is a myth. We have always had congestion, and we need to think differently if we're going to change that. Now, I find it interesting that I'm actually in the Contemporary Hotel today giving this presentation, because the other major idea you see from 50 years ago is some sexy transit alternative that's going to solve all of our problems. This system was known as or thought to be direct drive, where you could, there's multimodal in nature, as you can see, you could take your car around or for longer trips hook into this monorail. And you see monorails and the fingerprints of that all over ideas from 50 years ago. And in fact, really, one of the places we only really see monorails popping up is right where we are sitting today in the Contemporary Hotel. And, you know, we have to admit facts, and the facts is actually even when Disney World went through its second phase of expansion, what did it do? It abandoned its monorails for rubber-tired buses because of the cost effectiveness of it. So even here, it's had limited impact. So that's what we need to also recognize as we talk about the future. So I guess the question is, what happened? Why did not any of these technologies, like taking flight or sexy transit alternatives, why haven't they to date solved our transportation problem? And for me, it's very simple. The market happened. I think the lesson when we look from technologies of the past is it's not good enough just to have a technological solution to a problem like congestion on surface transportation. You have to have a technology that leverages the market. And we've found that to be true in other technologies over time. I can think of Gutenberg's printing press, which helped revolutionize publication, you know, publishing all across the world. And what about the Wright brothers and the discovery of flight at Kitty Hawk? Right? These are technologies that weren't just great innovations, but they were innovations that leveraged a market force. I think the lesson for us as we now move into the future is how are we as professionals and policymakers going to look to formulate policy that leverages the market and does not try to hinder it? So moving forward, talking about the future, we need to look at the cars of the future, I think, to begin with, before we talk about transit and other things, because the cars of the future are, in fact, our customers, right? And if we look to Hollywood for visions of the future in other areas, I think in this area, maybe the best thing we should do is look to Detroit. Maybe we should look to those sections of the marketplace that have the most vested interest in predicting accurately what the future of their industry is going to be. So after doing that, we can talk about the surface transportation network and how it's going to need to evolve. Well, in large, when we look into the future, we see some crazy ideas coming out of Detroit, like these supercars, like this Bugatti or this Audi. We also see ideas that kind of are the fantastic, the concept cars. Like Peugeot thinks she'll be driving this around by 2021, by the way. But this is not the majority of what we see being planned for the future out of Detroit and Tokyo. We see cars like this. We see very small cars, cars that have a lot of creature comforts. They unfortunately think you're going to be spending a lot of time in them. Cars that are small and cars that run on a variety of fuels. And maybe cars that you won't even own but will be shared and stackable and urban. And we also see cars that are specialized in function. Maybe in the future you won't have two cars per household, but you'll have the family truckster and then a specialized commuter that is represented by this vehicle on the screen. So this is what we see coming out of Detroit, and what we see is a few things. One, when they look to the fuels of the future in the automobile industry, they don't believe that one technology is going to carry the day. They don't think one source of fuel is going to be enough for the entire fleet. So what they are betting on is a potpourri of different types of vehicles, electric plug-in, hydrogen hybrid, and others. Will gasoline be in the future of automobiles? Maybe to a degree, but not a large degree. And of course, there's a financial implication to that that we'll talk about later. And also technology. The technology of the future and how cars are going to talk with one another, and hopefully the roadbed, is something we need to consider, because, you know, one thing we can look to do in the short term is get more capacity out of our existing network by having the cars be more intelligent and talk with one another. There's a couple of technologies out there today that we could point to. One of them is adaptive cruise control. What this does is, this is a vehicle with forward and rear firing radar, which allows a car to keep its forward speed in the traffic stream without you having to touch, you know, any of the gas pedals or anything. The other technology that we're seeing that's going to be out by 2010 is lane centering. And any of you who've got luxury automobiles and are doing well might know that there's certain vehicles now that have the lane departure warning systems, right? Where if you go outside of the lane, you get an audible beep. Well, what we're hearing from General Motors and others is by 2010, that will actually be replaced by the car staying in the lane. Instead of just getting a warning, you'll be able to engage that, and it will keep you inside of your lane. So think about that. Think about when your forward control, your forward speed, excuse me, is controlled and your lateral movement is controlled. At that point, really what you have is semi-autonomous driving, and you have the ability to maybe get more throughput or more capacity out of the surface transportation network, right? Let me give you an idea of what that might look like. Thank you. Well, I wanted to start off by talking about cars, because before we get to transit, we really need to talk about the majority of the surface transportation network as it exists today. And really what I'm showing you with technology and other things is that into the future, we will have the ability to increase the throughput of our existing infrastructure by utilizing technology. But technology alone won't be enough. And that's where we start to have the conversation about financing and transit. Remember, what do our customers look like in the future? Well, their cars running on various fuels that are interconnected and things like that. So what are we going to need out of a surface transportation network? Well, maybe we're going to have to start to think more intelligently, where we're going to have lane widths that vary, okay, by time of day for peak hour. And we maybe will even have reversibility. We could have roads now that are actually communicating with the cars. Think about getting beyond just cars talking with one another to the more distant future where the cars and the roadbed are starting to talk to one another. Once we get there, I mean, you have the ability for automated speed control, heads-up signage, things like that, which will radically increase the throughput of the surface transportation network. But we're also going to see multimodal transportation corridors into the future, because even with those gains in capacity from technology, they're not going to be enough to push as many people as we're going to need through the corridor. So, you know, we're going to see something like this, where you're going to have shared right-of-way, and you're going to have transit in the center or in the same lanes as the vehicle. This is more of the distant future. Maybe it'll look like this. Started out with the technology to talk about how we can make marginal gains in the capacity of our roadway network by using intelligence that we're going to see into the future, having cars start to talk with one another, but then also have the cars talk with the roadway as well. But what we all have to recognize is there's going to be very limited capacity gains overall through those technologies alone. What we need to realize in the future when we talk about multimodal options in transit is our transportation network in the future is going to be fully tolled all of the time. Remember, in the future, and what you're going to hear from Lowell when he comes up, is you're going to hear about the financial issues that are surrounding roadways and transportation today. And probably a lot of us know a lot about that. We keep hearing that over and over. So what we're going to see in the future is a transportation network where everybody is priced all of the time. And when everybody is priced all the time, there's going to be a great new thing. Not only are we going to be able to have a revenue stream out of tolling, but we're going to be able to control demand and congestion through pricing. And this is where transit starts to become involved, because traditionally, transit, lots of forms of transit, have sought out their own exclusive right-of-way. And they've sought out their own exclusive right-of-way to get a time advantage on the automobile trip. But once we get to the point that the existing roadway network has a guaranteed level of service, now transit can start to operate inside that roadway network, because it will still compete well because it will have a cost savings over the trip. And that's really where we get to the next generation. Why is this the future? Well, this is the future for the same reason that the past was the past. This isn't because it's what I want the future to be, but ladies and gentlemen, this is what the market is going to demand. Remember, we need to find a solution that leverages the market if we're going to have a congestion-free surface transportation network. So not only is the financial situation that you're going to hear about dictating that we go to some sort of all-inclusive tolling environment, but we now also have the technology to institute that sort of policy. I think if we would have had this sort of technology back in the 50s, we probably today would have an interstate system that is fully tolled. But today we've got the technology that's going to allow us to go to a fully user-financed transportation system, which means people are now going to fully realize the cost of their transportation network, and that will allow transit to compete well into the future. Think about this just for a second. Think about a new revenue model. Think about a revenue model where everybody is priced. Everybody pays per mile or however you want to do it for the transportation system that they use all of the time, right? They pay a standard toll. They're priced that way all of the time, and we can use that toll to replace or augment the gas tax. But then also think, if there was a secondary toll that was only charged in the peak hours, not everywhere, not on rural roads and rural counties, but in urban, you know, roads and urban counties, people would pay a congestion charge. What they'd be paying for is their access to limited capacity. And that would generate a second stream of revenue that just possibly, theoretically, you could subsidize transit with. You now have a stable source of revenue for transit, which is something that all transit providers struggle to have and would all love to have. And just thinking about it, you could even possibly charge a third tier. You could actually charge an environmental toll. Germany does this through its emission standards with heavy trucks. They do this today. If you think about it today, we in two different sectors of our public policy, we really have a dilemma. We have a transportation policy section that says, hey, we're funded through fuel tax, so we really like Hummers and we really want you to burn a lot of fuel because then our revenues go up. But we're also getting to a point with energy policy and climate change that a lot of people say, hey, we think we want to take a different stance on emissions and greenhouse gases. Well, really, these two policies are at odds. But when you get to a future where you actually toll people instead of, you know, charge them based on how much fuel they consume, you have the ability to bring energy policy and transportation policy closer together. You could charge an environmental toll and then subsidize environmental programs or other things with that other stream of revenue. Just a thought.
Every day, over a quarter of a million commuters travel the 91...
What I want to show you, as this is playing, is this is an example of existing express lanes today in California. And imagine through these tolled, dynamically priced express lanes, when you see how they work, imagine if you had bus rapid transit running down the middle of this shared right-of-way. No need to go buy additional right-of-way. All you need to do is set buses on this existing corridor to increase your transit ridership. This is what it looks like.
Over to the 91 express lanes and see what it's like to enjoy a fast, safe, reliable commute each time you drive the 91.
These are the sort of pilot programs that I think over the next 10 to 15 years are going to be the beginning of the next wave of transit, transit in existing corridors, where we don't have to go out there and try to identify exclusive right-of-way for light rail or other types of things, though that's absolutely probably necessary in certain applications. This is a low-cost way to put transit inside of an existing corridor. And I'm going to show you a second video now that gives a better illustration of how bus rapid transit might work. Let me show you that.
For example, on the I-15, managed lane technology will be deployed to systematically connect our freeway capacity with modern transit options. Direct access ramps will provide quicker neighborhood access to these freeways within a freeway. These ramps are also part of a comprehensive bus rapid transit, or BRT, system. In addition, operators of the freeway managed lanes will use movable center dividers, or zippers, to reverse lanes or to create truck-only lanes to improve safety and relieve congestion.
Now, I'm going to talk about this slide in a second, but, you know, I think one of the things folks need to realize, whether they're highway people or transit people, is, in fact, that we do have a shared future. Highway people need a funding source, and they're looking for that funding source, and a lot of people are talking about that in VMT fees or user financing and tolling. And transit needs a stable source of revenue and a place to operate and build capital projects that are less expensive. So we actually could have a very good shared future together going into the future. One of the things I want to point out is this is a modal trend summary. This is like a 9.2 on the geekometer here on my slides today. For as much as people have complained about congestion for the last 25 years, pre-$4 a gallon gasoline, I give you that. Look at this modal trend summary. What you're seeing is how millions of people commute to work nationally every day. And with congestion going up, fuel prices going up, all of the wasted hours that we hear reported out in congestion, wasted fuel, the only mode of transportation to go up in the last 20 years for commuting to work is driving alone. Transit is flat, carpooling is down, and the only other mode to go up, and it's slight as an overall percentage, is telecommuting. Telecommuting today is taking as much trips off of our roadways as transit is. And so I think that's a very interesting thing. As much as we've talked about it, people still aren't feeling the pain or the full cost of their transportation decisions. And okay, this is probably the hardest slide I've got, but I wanted to put this in here. What you're looking at is this is how people commute every morning by land area. So for instance, you're seeing a metropolitan area, one metropolitan area in a suburb and a central city. If you look at that 16.6, what that means is every morning 16.6 million people commute from a suburb into a central city. 24.5 million commute within a central city. And then all of those other arrows show how other people commute every day. Now the two in blue, the 16.6 and the 24.5, they're highlighted because if you think about it, those are the two commuter flows that today are served very well by traditional transit. There are other commuter flows that are served by transit, but not as robustly. So you've got all of these folks that don't necessarily have a great alternative to the automobile. And a lot of that just has to do with land use patterns. So what we all have to recognize is we do have a shared interest in coming up with a new stream of revenue for funding transportation and a better way to make transit work for all of these commuter sheds. And where all these people live and work, that's not all going to change overnight. So we've got to find a way to service them where they are today. We need to remember that we want to do two things. If we're going to get to that Hollywood vision, we need a new revenue model for funding transportation, and we need to manage congestion. You know, as traffic engineers and others, they know what congestion looks like. It looks like that. To the rest of the world, it looks like that. We know what it is. What we need to do is use pricing and mode shift to get that split out during the day and into different places. You know, we need to remember that congestion isn't 20% congested in the peak hour. Okay, it's about 10 to 12. And we also have to remember that there's maybe 10 to 15% discretionary travel in the peak hour. So the combination of pricing and modal alternatives like better transit, newer types of transit like BRT, can get us to this place where we don't have congestion in the peak hour. Well, really, this is one of my favorite quotes. It's from Alan Kay. He says, the best way to predict the future is to invent it. And I think that's really what we all have to do. We have to stop looking at the same things, the same ways, and the way we've been doing it forever, and come up with a new solution. How do we deliver the future? Probably the reason I'm at this, giving this presentation to this mixed group today, is probably the second or third bullet. I think what we need to do is we need to start to educate stakeholders and decision makers. We as a group, as transportation professionals, need to recognize that if you're pro-highway, you're pro-tolling. If you're pro-environment, you're pro-tolling. And if you're pro-transit, you're pro-tolling. So I really do think we have a shared vision and a shared future. And we as professionals need to start to prove this business model to customers through things like BRT system on I-15 in California and other places. Get them out there and get them touching it and using it. So I'm going to show you a second video, a video that Ed does not like at all. The acting is really bad. It's really not sexy at all. But this is an idea, or this is an answer to that first Hollywood vision video. If we're willing to think differently, this is how we achieve that Hollywood vision for the next 50 years.
The state of Florida. The state of Florida in 2055. Imagine a surface transportation system that is fully user-financed by time of day, level of congestion, and type of vehicle. Imagine a surface transportation system that treats motorists like customers and lets the individual choose how much they want to pay for their transportation costs. Imagine a roadway network without congestion. Let's see that reality. Using the existing technology of today and a proven business model, we can use tolling to control demand and manage congestion. Eventually, this model could be a replacement for the motor fuel tax.
Hey there, it's Wednesday, my day to pick up Jane. We're on our way to work. We carpool together because we live in the same neighborhood and work close to each other downtown, but mainly because of this new road fee system. This new road fee system charges me for every mile I drive based on the time of day. My employer actually lets me telecommute for twice a week, and then the other 3 days, Jane and I take turns carpooling to share our transportation costs. I gotta tell you, it took a couple of weeks to get used to, but now I love it. You know, the best thing about this new road fee system is I'm treated like a customer. It's my choice as to how I want to travel and how much I want to pay. Finally, I have a choice in the matter, and I love it.
Notice how the traffic stream remains constant, but the type of vehicles traveling the corridor vary by time of day, with a large contingent of transit vehicles in the peak hours.
Hey, this new transit service is great. I used to drive to work, but I find the bus is just as fast and more convenient than driving my car. On the bus, I can catch up on emails, read the latest news online, and finish some work. My commute cost is a lot less using transit. I love the money I save, and I can get my favorite coffee right here on the bus. This is my definition of first class.
Again, the traffic stream remains constant, but the vehicles traveling the corridor vary, with a significant percentage of freight distribution moving to the off-peak hours.
I've been driving a truck for over 20 years,
and boy, have things changed.
I remember when my routes were so congested that I would only be able to make one, two deliveries in any given day. Today, over 75% of our deliveries are made at night or in the early morning, when congestion is at its lowest. Road rates are lower, and there's also a lot less stress in my driving day. Yeah, I work at night now. But I work 3 12-hour shifts and have 4 days off to spend with my kids. I'd never go back to the way things were.
Imagine a surface transportation system that is fully financed, treats motorists like customers, and operates without congestion.
Never promised good acting at all. Whenever I see the trucker, I'm just waiting for him to hit the wall, you know? Look at the road! Truthfully, the first time we shot that, he did it great and he didn't have a seatbelt on, so we had to reshoot it. That's my time. Really, what they asked me to do today was to kind of set up the 50 years, the big vision about sharing transit, surface transportation, financing, and how we bring it all together. And, you know, I'll just close by saying, you know, if you remember one thing, I mean, imagine a roadway network without congestion that's fully financed and treats everybody like a customer. I mean, that's something we can do. That's something we did for 2,000 years with pay-as-you-go infrastructure, with user-financed infrastructure, I should say. So that's my time setting up the vision, and I'll leave it to the rest of the panel to tell you how we're actually going to do it. Thank you.
Setting that up. Thank you, Matt. I got to tell you, when Matt first showed that video in my house to my wife, her only comment was, "Ed doesn't drink Starbucks."
Ed doesn't even like Starbucks.
He doesn't even like Starbucks.
We're ready?
Yeah, we're all good.